Welcome to the Reaction podcast. I'm Maggie Pagano, executive editor of Reaction, and I'm taking the place, if that's possible, of the irreplaceable Ian Martin. With me to discuss everything that's going on in Westminster and everywhere else in the UK and maybe a little bit of overseas is the eminent journalist Tim Montgomery, founder of Conservative Home and a great friend of the Reaction family. Welcome back.
Thank you. I think we haven't
been doing this for a couple of years, actually.
No, it's been a long time. And first of all, can I say thank you for calling me eminent rather than veteran? I keep getting called veteran now, and it makes me feel so old.
I understand exactly why. Never to use veteran. Or even doyen. Another one.
But normally, of course, we used to do it on video, didn't we? So I prefer audio. Then people can't see how wrinkled I am and how veteran I actually am.
Welcome to the youthful Tim Montgomery. So, Tim, Westminster is abuzz with plotting, rumours certainly of plotting.
It always is.
As always, yes, that maybe the Conservatives once again might be contemplating regicide against and hoping to potentially replace Rishi Sunak ahead of meeting Sir Keir Starmer at the elections. And possibly the date that they might do it from is after the May elections, which will probably be devastating. Hmm. What do you think of those rumours?
Well, as you say, the irreplaceable Ian Martin isn't with us because he takes a different view on this. So he will have to listen to me with perhaps your...
And me potentially,
with you coming back at me, perhaps. But Ian does not agree with me on this. But I was of the view, Maggie, that changing Prime Minister yet again was impossible. You couldn't do it again. Although I kind of think, well, if you've changed the Prime Minister three times, maybe changing four times doesn't exactly make a huge difference. The electorate already sees us.
People do it with their wives, their bank accounts and all sorts of things.
Why not with their Prime Ministers? And it is, a bit of a joke that I think if the Conservative Party does change Prime Minister again, there have been more Conservative Prime Ministers in this Parliament than there have been Labour Prime Ministers since the Second World War. Putting that aside for a moment, I thought we shouldn't change. Because I don't think there's anyone, even if Jesus Christ returned and in some theological reason led the Conservative Party can save it, remain in government. But it is important that we minimise the defeat. Yeah. And I have come to the view that Rishi Sunak is so useless at politics. So useless. A good man, but so useless at politics that anyone who says with certainty this is the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, I just don't think they can have that certainty. We're in such febrile times across the world, not just in Britain. But I now have come to the view that it's worth a roll of the dice because, and interestingly, someone I was talking to at the Times only this morning, Tuesday, said they disagreed with me, but they thought actually one of the people who, from his understanding, much more sympathetic to my conclusion than his was actually the Prime Minister. And although he hasn't come to the conclusion that he should go, he has become very conscious that, I think he's been asking openly to people in Downing Street, am I any good at this? Mm. And he is asking himself. Mm. We've seen how many relaunches. We've seen him keep putting his, big changes.
It's sort of quite endearing watching him, but tragic, isn't it?
But he is not unaware of he's very aware of how frustrated he is.
Yeah, his own limitations.
Yeah.
And he came in such difficult circumstances. It's been tricky for him. Just five pledges, these things don't work. Mm. So, and I agree with you, Tim. I think they've got to have another go. And it is about mitigating the scale of the defeat. Mm. At the moment with Rishi, it could be down to 100 MPs?
Well, both of us, back to that theme of veteran, both of us are old enough to remember 92 to 97. I don't know what you think, but 92 to 97, that Conservative government, which ended up with the landslide Blair defeat, I don't know what you think. I think it was a better government than we have now. Howard was...
Oh, that government.
Yeah. Howard was doing his prison reforms.
Yep.
The Ken Clark and the Ken and Eddie show.
Turned it round.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was a good government, and yet it still lost on the scale it did. I don't think the ethical problems were as bad as they have. How many by-elections in this Parliament now? 23, I think we're up to. Although people always say that, Keir Starmer is, no Tony Blair. Well, Rishi Sunak is no John Major. John Major, then, people forget, was actually quite popular. He was certainly a lot more popular than the Conservative Party.
Sort of housewife's choice, wasn't he? I think I even wrote that at the time. So it's the scale. And also, I think more than just the scale of defeat, I think voters, even though they're not in hell's chance that they vote Tory, want to see those with latent support want to see the Tories fighting.
Yeah.
And they're not fighting now.
No.
I mean, they're fighting amongst themselves, like ferrets in a sack, but not fighting some of the really big ideas, whether it's on energy. We know that the energy policy is terrible. Immigration, these big, big challenges that we face. Nobody's tackling them. A few individuals. So if there were regicide, who is your preferred candidate?
Look, I will answer that question. I'm not trying to get away with it. But can I just say how much I agree with what you've just said? And it's so much missing from the debate because both of us, if we had a majority of 80, you became prime minister, I became prime minister, we'd know exactly what we want to do with it.
Yeah.
Housing would be top of my bill. Maybe energy would be top of yours. Yeah. But housing, energy, vocational education, there's plenty of stuff to this country.
So
when will we next have a Tory majority of six? We may never have it again.
No.
Not to have used the year and a bit that Sunak has had as Prime Minister to at least begin to do
particularly
some big stuff.
Particularly on housing, they could have just, I'm sorry, there's so much they could have done.
Yeah.
Starting with taking a French approach, saying, right, we are building here.
Yeah.
Mind you, I have a caveat on the building that we've got to learn to build more beautiful, efficient houses.
Beauty
that
is
that fundamental.
But who do
So who do you think? You're not going to get out of it.
If I was dictator and I could, you know,
benign,
this is not a this is not a prediction. This is who I would have. I would have Tom Tugendhat.
Okay. Remember him.
Tom's a serious guy.
Yeah.
He's a compassionate conservative. He's a man steeped in public service. He was a Remainer. But he's accepted the results.
I don't think that matters now what they do.
It matters, unfortunately, to quite a lot of Conservative MPs, and it matters to me that Brexit's accepted. You know, like to people like Tobias Elwood have never come to terms with it. But we're moving into an era where foreign policy is going to become bigger and bigger.
It is.
And Tom is a proper thought-through hawk, military man, of course, by background.
China.
Yeah. And it would end. It would mean a pretty stormy relationship with China would begin, because he certainly wouldn't have come up with a quite compromise, watered-down position that the government took on Monday in response to the the hack of the Electoral Commission. But I would choose Tom. I would like to see him get... I think your constituency MP is probably the likeliest to emerge. Yeah. Kemi Badenoch, I think, would be the one most likely to emerge.
I think because of what we both agreed on, that we've got to go down fighting, and Kemi would.
Mm.
She's a very brave, courageous woman. I think she has the story and the hinterland. I think great PMs are those that have I don't want to use that word vision, but have a view and of right and wrong and what can be done. And I think Kemi has that in spades. And so I think she could be quite powerful.
Mm.
And she was certainly, I think she would make it certainly tougher for Labour to attack the government. There is Suella, Penny brought up, although I think Philip Johnson last week in the Daily Telegraph had a great idea, I thought, which is that Penny should stand against Sadiq Khan in the mayoral elections.
Interesting.
She's quite a London sort of figure and Boudicca from Westminster.
I know a few middle-aged men who still got quite excited at that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And she won't get elected as PM, despite all the plotting, I don't think, for the reasons and some of her on the softer issues. I think she doesn't quite fit with the mainstream. So I would have thought that's an excellent choice. But yeah, so Suella, Kemi, Tom. Liz Truss wouldn't try a comeback, would she?
Oh, goodness gracious. I now have a test, Maggie.
Okay.
Anybody who's really defending Liz Truss now, I'd refuse to take seriously. I'm basically against litmus tests in politics. But if you still defend Liz Truss, you know, she was a diabolical prime minister. And maybe there was some hope for rehabilitation if she'd acknowledge that. And she said to the country, said to the party, this is what I did wrong. This is what I've learnt. This is what because the party's going to have to go through a very big period of
reflection
after this to know why this 14-year period of Conservative government has been so much less productive than the 18 years that Major and Thatcher led. And she could have almost been written the first self-critical review of that and invited other people to do the same. And it wouldn't have meant that people would forgive her for a time as Prime Minister, but there would have been a grown-up
debate, discussion.
There would have been a respect that at least she'd come. She tried to come to terms with her mistake. But none of that, none of that. Yeah. She thinks it's a conspiracy. That she was brought. It's
so
just
deluded,
mad as a box of frogs.
And yet so many of her growth-driven policies, you know, a word, and we'll talk about Rachel Reeves in a minute, were the right ones and the obvious ones that this country needs to follow. And if only she could acknowledge that, yeah, I know the policies, but we executed it so badly. I mean, fancy sacking the permanent secretary. And,
everything
I mean,
was...
Anyway,
she was no Margaret Thatcher. Margaret Thatcher would not, you know, she knew. Can I turn the tables a little bit on you, though, Maggie? You want to come on to Rachel Reeves. Before we do that, can... The Tories, of course, are pinning a lot of hope on an economic turnaround. Assuming that the election is going to be October, November, where do you think the economy is going to be in that sort of time? Is there any? Have they really got much to base that hope on?
Well, as you remember, Tim, one of the pledges was that inflation would be down.
Yeah.
And in fact, it probably will be down below its 2% target in April. That is not because of the Conservative government, despite Jeremy Hunt sort of saying. But, you know, I think most people understand it was a global issue and that interest rates have been a very brutal instrument for a lot of families.
Yeah.
Facing double mortgage payments. Yeah. And we had interest rates too low. So I think the economy is turning. We had negative growth for the last two quarters, but this last one will show, I think, a tiny uptick. Mm-hmm. Andrew Bailey in the bank last week indicated that we'll now see cuts.
Yeah.
My own view is that they probably should have been bold last week and cut. Although there is a view that that might have given people the idea, false illusion, that we're going through a boom. Easter is always the time for shopping and spending, mm-hmm. and maybe given too much confidence. So there might be a bit of psychology there in that they're holding back. We know they were too long in raising them, and I just hope that they won't be too long bringing them down. I think that's been accepted now, the accepted view. Although it wasn't, I mean, last April when I actually was arguing myself that...
I remember you doing.
They could have held off. They should have done. So I think things will be feeling a little better, not a lot better, but we still have a very volatile geopolitical situation.
Yeah.
We've seen what the spillover from Israel Hamas has had in the Red Sea with the Houthis stopping these boats.
Yep.
I was in home base the other day, which is a great source of stories for me. and the lady I was talking to said, oh, you know, we can't get any Walida mops because they're made in Ukraine. And of course, the factory is on slowdown. And then garden furniture said it's been delayed 3 months.
Yeah.
Because it comes now, got to go around the Horn of Africa,
because
it can't come through the Red Sea. So, you know, they're imponderables like that.
Yeah. And that's the sort of thing, because even if the economy turns up, you know, our everyday experience of you go in Tesco's and all the meat still seems to be going up, you know, and people, of course, even if inflation's down, people say, well, price is still going up, necessarily understanding what inflation is. But
so what was it last month? So it's still 3% up.
Which is an awful lot more than it's been for a very long time.
I know, you can see it from the most basic household.
And income, where are real disposable incomes? Are we going?
I don't think we're going to see any.
Yeah, because that's the biggie, isn't it? If people do not feel that their pound in their pocket is going further, it's not going to have real much of a play. And of course, back to 92 to 97, the economy was booming then, and of course, voters, once they've decided against a political party, and they think that you've messed up or your time is up. They don't. It doesn't really.
No, just because the milk in Tesco is down 2p, they're not going to go, oh, well, I might just give Rishi or Kemi or whoever a chance, are they? No, I think people want a fresh face.
Yeah.
It's just a pity that the opposite side isn't a little bit fresher.
I think you and I are in the same view of Rachel. Because I don't think they will have much money, so that they're not going to bust the economy that way. My worry about Rachel Reeves is that she's completely signed up to what I think is the backdoor nationalisation of much of the private sector in Britain, is that you've got all these human resource, environmental compliance departments now in all big companies, run by 20 and 30 somethings just out of university, fresh with these ideas. They've never raised, you know, they've never created a job or whatever in their life, but they're sucking the life out of a lot of our private industry. And I thought it was interesting when Nigel Farage did his thing against NatWest, Keir Starmer recognised that... it was interesting that Rachel Reeves did not join in her leader. And I think she's very close to that whole culture at the top. And
reverse, actually. She gave an interview to Channel 4.
Mm-hmm.
I've forgotten precise words, but it was sort of supporting Dame Alison Rose.
I think it's already bad under a Conservative government. But how much worse could it get?
It's been allowed, if not fed and embedded under a Conservative. Yeah. I mean, that is... You know, Stonewall is in just about and all these various ticking boxes. You know, are you the best LG? Are you the happiest place to work? Been allowed under 14 years, going back probably started, well, it started under Blair, firmly embedded now. So they've done nothing to stop that. But yeah, I think on the economy, actually, we won't see the usual disastrous. Although, of course, the city always does, has typically done well under a Labour government because they're usually high spenders, but this time they won't be the spending. But what I think is indicative about Rachel Reeves, obviously very competent, very serious thinker, is the way she's surrounded herself. I mentioned this in last week's column, with all the, the worst, sorry, worst, so they're all very good people, big company people who thrive on, if you like, the corporate agenda. And also, they can afford it. It's like big business supported the EU.
Yeah. They could afford to impose the regulations in Brussels,
but the small businesses can't. So she's got Aviva, BlackRock, you know, all these ESG in the vanguard of supporters. And that is the fear that they will get so tied up, and that will seep down to small businesses, won't it? Or the small, vital, they're about 6 to 10% new businesses in the economy at any one time, they reckon. A lot of research on this that provide the next big leap in growth. It's not the fish and chip shop owner, but, you know, those, the small startups. They're the companies that, if anybody wants growth, that's where it's going to come from. And if we tie them up in regulation, then that would be disastrous.
Do you hold out any hope that, because we've been in a long period, not just Britain, but most of the advanced Western world, apart from America with its cheaper energy, we've been in a particularly long period of low, sluggish growth now. Do you think there is any, you know, politicians always say when they get into power, oh, we've seen the books and it's much worse than we thought. Is there any chance Labour, learning, you know, on the Nixon and China theory, that Labour actually could deregulate? Labour could actually go in and think the only way we're going to do stuff. And in a way, they are, if they deregulate, well, the Tories can't really say, well, you know, go to the left of them, but could is there? Do you have? Am I being entirely
No. And I actually was thinking this a couple of weeks ago. It's sort of Blair's Clause 4 moment, or even Charles de Gaulle letting Algeria go independent. You know, it has to be the one who can't do it. So I've thought that on the NHS, that Wes Streeting, and a lot of what he said is very admirable. You know, a Tory health minister couldn't say those things. So, you know, if they're, for me, the bright spot of a Labour government would be that Labour government actually gets to, and maybe they would, maybe she, if she would be brave. I did also suggest last week that she cross the Rubicon and bring James Dyson, who, as you know, has apparently had some fisticuffs with Jeremy Hunt last week in a meeting. And Hunt said, well, if you think that, you stand for election. I thought, well, what, you know, that she is, that's who she should be talking to. He runs his own campus, huge multi-billion business, Cambridge University, named a college, you know, named that, you know, learn from his experience. He has the apprenticeships. He knows how to invest in R&D. That's what we need.
Maybe get maybe get the Weatherspoons boss in as well.
Well, bridge too far. Okay. And, I'm sure, but you do. Yes, so it could well be. Maybe they'll surprise us.
And but overall, though, your view is that the economy, because I'm gloomy about China. You don't share my gloom about China, do you? But we could be in a position whereby, although people talk about Labour's inheritance being awful, the worst may be behind us. We don't know what's going to happen in Ukraine. We don't know what's going to happen in Israel. And but they haven't got the golden inheritance they had in 1997. But it's not as though they're taking over the economy from 2 years ago.
We won't be in recession. Interest rates, I suspect, if they do one cut in May, maybe another cut July, maybe two or three cuts, bring it down to 4.5. That could be quite nice. We see some mortgage rates coming down. People, so a slight feel-good factor coming back. No, I mean, China, everyone wants to talk down China. I'm not an expert. It's very difficult to read China because they don't produce the...
You can't believe their stats.
They're not accurate stats. But the consensus seems to be it's still growing 3.5% this year. Well, you know, what would we do for 3.5%?
But I'm hesitating now because
energy
you've got an economic brain that I do not have. But
I don't know about that.
But they were growing at 8-9%.
Yeah, I know, but no country can sustain that.
But that's not the point. The point surely is that the world was, you know, growing at 3%. Partly off
the back of their rate,
and if they're growing at 3% and potentially worse, you know, they have an awful lot of these sort of fake cities, don't they, which have huge building projects with no one living or operating from them.
Their property.
That's going to, if not send China into negative growth, you could easily see growth falling further, couldn't you?
Tailing off, yeah. But don't forget that the state, everything's owned a bit, ultimately by the Chinese state. And so what will they do? They can print more money, certainly for some time.
But that's
to come.
A short-term solution, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, I know, as we've seen in the West. I hope they don't follow our example. Yeah. But I think we're sort of some way, events, you know.
Well, I hope you are right.
And they have cheap energy. Yeah. I mean,
No. They are fighting climate change.
Well, they're doing both, aren't they?
I know. I'm being sarcastic, yes.
And then they're selling us their EVs and solar panels. I mean, this is something going back to Labour's policy, and it's very interesting. And I have asked to interview him, and they keep promising, but Gary Smith, head of the GMB union, probably follows some of his comments.
I do.
You know, obviously, he's talking his own book. He wants to keep his guys in jobs, quite rightly so. But he's made the point that their energy policy is economically illiterate. The idea that it's going to create a boom in jobs is not actually correct, because the people making those solar, the solar photovoltaic cells and the wind turbines are in China or elsewhere, not here in Britain.
No. And that's
clear. And they're not efficient anyway.
And that's true of the tidal and energy tidal, as well as the solar, the wind, onshore wind.
And gas is still the cheapest.
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact numbers, but I think the wind turbine operators are being paid or want 240p per kilowatt. Which is something like three times the cost of energy in Europe.
Well, that,
you know, the subsidies that we're paying to these guys is horrendous.
And the reality is, of course, if you're going to be grown up about this and you're going to level with the voter, the people, you're going to say some of these environmental bets are going to come off big time and some of them won't. And we don't know which quite yet. And, you know, but you look at Hinkley Point, how much is that now over budget? There'll be some of this, even if Labour get the $28 billion environmental investment fund, you know, with I think now three quarters of it they're penciling and coming from the private sector because they won't fund it themselves, famously now. Some of that isn't going to work. Some of it's going to be bets and technologies that don't work, like Hinkley or you know, go over price. It's not an easy road ahead. No, it really isn't.
It's going to be very interesting, but I think it's due, the decision is due on who to give the license to make SMRs.
SMRs, the small, medium modular reactors,
which are seen.
Yeah.
I mean, the technology is proven.
Yeah.
And the British Rolls-Royce actually has already been approved by the EU.
British company,
absolutely. And so it would not need to, I think I'm correct in saying it doesn't need to go through the hoops of the EU because it's been approved, whereas the others... No, Microsoft has pulled out. Bill Gates has pulled out. But the others are all foreign.
Yeah.
It would be, you would think, insane not to give this to Rolls-Royce. Yeah. But we have to go through that procedure.
Of course, yeah.
Because it was inherited from retained law.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Well, we need to get rid of some of that, but that's another topic.
Yeah. And I think under judicial review, others would be able to. Anyway, you've got to have some sort of international tender, I guess, because we wouldn't want to overpay. But Rolls-Royce is so obviously.
Yeah.
But going back to the technology, you're right. We have to take bets. And another reason why we need to put so much more research and substance behind our research laboratories and universities and R&D for these companies.
Absolutely.
Good. So, GB News. Tim, last time I spoke to you, just remembered, you were appearing, you had a show.
Yeah. I didn't have a show, I was a regular appearer, and I left GB News, and I think, isn't it fascinating, we're talking about it now, so we're falling into the trap, but all these people who say it doesn't matter, the rest of the mainstream media spends an awful lot of time talking about them, doesn't it?
And
the fact is, it's now regularly overhauling the BBC in the ratings. Certainly beating Sky regularly. And there's a difference between its daytime lineup and its evening lineup. That's definitely true. But I think it's beginning to sort itself out. I think it's always been plucky and it's an outsider. And all the things people used to laugh at, you know, the dimly lit studios, you remember that?
And those weird sort of backcloths.
Yes, exactly.
Union flag. And it looked like it was in somebody's backyard.
It did.
Yeah.
But in a way, I think... You know, the sniffy sort of people with their flash studios, they underestimated how actually that reinforced the idea that they were the plucky outsiders.
And we like plucky outsiders.
British people love plucky outsiders. And I think they are providing something that clearly a lot of people want. And I actually think in a lot of their lineups, they have sort of more Corbynista voices than you do on the BBC. Yeah, yeah, no. They platform different views. Mm. Now, they're clearly coming from the right. Mm. But I, when Ofcom, you know, did their latest attack on the political presenters, why they don't get so exercised about LBC having David Lammy and all these other, Chris Bryant and other people. I honestly think, I think Ofcom really need to be careful because they are coming up against the views of a lot of the people they're supposed to represent. And I actually think it's more honest having, say, Nigel Farage. You know what Nigel Farage is coming. Whereas Emily Maitlis and all these people, she's not on the BBC anymore, now does the news agency, as you say, but there's so many BBC presenters, you know exactly, on Newsnight, they may be careful in party politics, but when it comes to the woke agenda or climate action on climate change, they have an absolutely clear right, but they profess to be impartial. Yeah. I'd much rather have honest, straight down, I'm Nigel Farage, in favour of Brexit, blah, 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 than people telling us that they're presenting the news neutrally, and they're not.
Which is nonsense, we know anyway. And what they say is so predictable, but what the irony, or the paradox, if you like, of all this is, it's in the name of diversity. Don't we want to be diverse and have spread of opinions?
Yeah. I recently did a BBC programme and I got the form, you know, was I a man, was I a woman, was I something gay, else. Straight, black, you know, sort of. It didn't ask questions like, was I privately educated or public, you know, was I a parent, did I have religious views? So you can end up with all sorts of privately educated black male barristers who never go to church, who don't have children, and technically, you know, they would be ticking all the diversity boxes. But actually, would you have people who understand Britain more? It is too narrow a definition of diversity.
Okay, lovely to talk to you again, Tim. Hope to see you again soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Reaction Podcast, hosted by me, Ian Martin. To receive my weekly subscriber newsletter every weekend, go to www.reaction.life. Until next time, thank you for listening.